It's Monday, November 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Belgium braces for what it says is an imminent terror attack.
It's hard to really find these people before they attack. They're not on the radar before they attack. They're just everyday normal Palestinians.
Israeli-Palestinian violence precedes a visit by the top U.S. diplomat. Also ahead, U.S. voters, candidates, and Congress react to the threat of terrorism. And stay with us to hear about the top 10 rappers of all time. It's all on today's International Edition. Belgium is maintaining its highest alert level for the capital on Monday and closing schools amid a serious and imminent threat of terror attacks. The rest of the country will be at a level of 3 on a 4-tier scale. Belgian security forces are searching for several suspects tied to the recent terror attacks in Paris, according to a top official, with residents in Brussels facing heavily patrolled streets during a city-wide lockdown. Authorities are looking for Paris suspect Salah Abdeslam, who is believed to have entered Belgium immediately after a coordinated shooting and bomb rampage that killed 130 people, as well as others linked to the November 13th attacks claimed by Islamic State. Belgium's prime minister had warned that several individuals with arms and explosives could launch an attack in one or more places in and around the capital. Authorities have told VOA the warning was based on quite precise information, including the possibility that Abdeslam could be planning a suicide attack in the city. VOA's Heather Murdoch is in Brussels. She joins us. Heather, what have you seen as you've moved about the city Sunday?
There was heavy security today. We saw police and soldiers pretty much everywhere, tanks monitoring the tourist sites. There were still some tourists, but the journalists kind of outnumbered the tourists, and the journalists were all here because we've heard that there might be an imminent terrorist attack here. So what we saw was a lot of anticipation and a bit of fear and a bit of defiance, where some people, like some business owners, were saying, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen and we're just going to hope it doesn't happen. So we're going to stay open and hope for the best.
It was interesting in some of the late hours, I noticed just following social media that there was an operation around one of the hotels. And in fact, authorities had even asked people not to tweet about ongoing operations. It gave me the sense of this is a very heightened atmosphere.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, there was a lot of tension today. The one thing I saw today was by the train station, where there were a lot of TV cameras. Here in Brussels, there's not a lot of restraints for journalists. People can just set up their cameras anywhere. So a lot of people set up their cameras around a train station that was operating, that was coming from other parts of Belgium. And at some point during the day, the police and the soldiers just kicked everybody out. And they kicked everybody, not just the journalists, out and cleared the area. And my thought at the time was that they were concerned with the fact that there were so many cameras on a soft target, that anybody could take the opportunity of this day, that there's so much anticipation to conduct an attack, even if they weren't planning it. So it's almost like the anticipation of these attacks is creating a more dangerous situation. So everyone is on high alert, and the police do appear to be quite nervous.
Now, I understand the subway system has been closed. How about other public transportation? Have you seen anything moving around?
Well, taxis are moving around. The metros are closed. The trains that go around the country are open, but some of the routes have been closed, so it's become much more difficult for people to travel. So a lot of the people just trying to conduct their everyday business are having problems. I worked with a guy today who spent 3 hours doing a journey that should have taken 1 hour.
We hope that things remain relatively calm during your stay in Brussels, and we'll check back with you as things develop. Heather Murdoch, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Belgian media outlets also reported police had arrested late Saturday 4 people, one possibly wearing a suicide belt, although those reports could neither be confirmed nor denied by officials. Well, it's that time on our program when we turn to our social media segment. G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22 to talk about a new feature that Facebook is trying out for the brokenhearted. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
So what's the gist of this tool?
It has to do with the way you interact with your ex. So it could be an ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, ex-husband, ex-wife, you name it, ex-fling. The new set of tools provides users an option to see fewer posts from these people without having to block or unfriend them. Facebook began testing the feature on mobile devices Thursday.
Okay, so if you wanted to stay friends with them on Facebook, you could do that without being too harsh.
Exactly. Because although some people do unfriend or block their exes on social media completely, others find it to be in poor taste. Also, it could be a good way to wean off their presence in your life. Old habits die hard, and drastic changes are sometimes difficult to get used to.
Absolutely. How much attention is this getting on social media?
Many media outlets are writing about the change. On social media, Time, Mashable, The Guardian, and The Huffington Post have shared article links on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, I'm sure that's getting some heated debate. Mm-hmm. Tell us about an example.
Sure. Under Mashable's Facebook post, this comment got the most number of likes. Why don't we all take a break from Facebook? It's turning society into degenerates. More than 100 people liked that comment. Another user wrote, why have a tool for your exes? Either unfriend them, block them, or unfollow them. How hard can it be? Why torment yourself by having Facebook show you less of their posts? Ridiculous. Jim, what I found to be quite interesting is that a majority of the comments were made by male users, and there were about 150 comments under the Mashable's Facebook post, and only a handful of female users commented under that.
Well, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Before you go, where can we find out more information about this change?
There is a blog post on Facebook's press page at newsroom.fb.com. It's titled, Improving the Experience When Relationships End. Wah, wah. Back to you.
Well, our time has ended for now, but mm-hmm. I won't block you because you'll come back tomorrow.
Thank you.
G. Abby Lee tweets for our VOA International Edition Twitter account at VOA_IE, and you can also follow her on her own account at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Knife-wielding Palestinians carried out three attacks on Israelis in different parts of the West Bank Sunday, killing one civilian. Israeli officials say security forces and a civilian shot and killed all three of the Palestinian assailants. The violence comes just 2 days before U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is to visit Israel and the Palestinian territories to try to calm months of violence in the region. Ben Hartman is a reporter for the Jerusalem Post and a contributor to TLV1, Israel's only English-language radio station. Earlier, he spoke with International Edition's Michael Lippin, who asked him about how the Israeli government is responding to the Palestinian attacks.
In terms of, you know, preventative measures, there's only so much you can really do. They have raids in the West Bank. They arrest wanted men or people who are believed to have, ties to armed groups. But in this terror wave is all, what they keep calling lone wolf attacks. It's people who, for the most part, don't have any affiliation with any armed group, aren't themselves, armed. They don't have guns. They're not part of any sort of infrastructure, any sort of armed group or any cell or anything like that. So there's not really, it's hard to really find these people before they attack. They're not on the radar before they attack. They're just everyday normal Palestinians who get up that morning or that afternoon and just decide to go and stab somebody or to drive their car into a bus stop.
Well, does that mean it's also hard for the Palestinian Authority to try to prevent these kinds of attacks? And are they, in fact, taking such efforts to try to stop this violence?
It does make it quite difficult for the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian security forces to do much preventative measures. But certainly, if you were to look at the very least, the statements by Israeli authorities, Israeli politicians in recent months, they continue to point the finger at Abbas and the Palestinian Authority and say, you're inciting towards these acts of violence in your speeches and in your TV and propaganda and all that. At the same time, when they need help on the West Bank and you know, they collaborate and they cooperate in on security level. So it's a rather confusing situation.
Well, the Palestinian Authority has also accused Israeli officials and leaders of incitement and actually accused Israeli security forces of using excessive force when dealing with Palestinians, even those involved in attacks on Israelis. They've even gone so far as to accuse Israeli forces of planting knives on Palestinians. Have you seen any evidence to back up those accusations?
Not the planting of knives, and that's the sort of claim that isn't going to be taken very seriously by many people in Israel. That's another claim that's seen as being, you know, conspiracy theories sort of thing, but that's very common in the Arab world. That's very common in the Middle East. But if we look at the use of excessive force, you can make a case that there's been a push in recent months from Israeli politicians from all types really to call on the public to carry firearms if they can. It's quite hard. It's not like America. It's quite hard here for people to get a firearms permit. But there's been this push, this kind of easing of the process in order to allow more civilians out on the street to carry firearms, to be force multipliers for police, as it were, and to help, you know, prevent attacks while they're happening, or to stop them as they happen. And it's volatile. Certainly, on the one hand, excessive force can often be in the eye of the beholder. On the other hand, we've seen a number of cases of vigilante violence here, and I'm sure that if we were to look on a case-by-case basis, there would be ones where certainly the people probably could have been apprehended without being killed. On the other hand, we're dealing in each one of these cases with a split-second decision made by people who feel their lives are in danger and are part of a population that's facing daily terror attacks. So all that needs to be taken into account.
Ben Hartman, a reporter for the Jerusalem Post and contributor to TLV1 Radio. He was speaking with International Edition's Michael Lippin. Heightened concerns over possible terrorist threats are registering with U.S. residents. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman is here in the studio with new polling data after the deadly Islamic State attacks in Paris.
Well, Jim, we're starting to see the first results of polls that were conducted of the American public after the attacks in Paris. And as perhaps we should not be surprised, security concerns, and in particular concerns about terrorism, have leapt significantly. It's right behind the economy. Concerns about terrorism is the number one listed for 28% of voters who expect to vote next year in the presidential contest. The economy is still the number one concern for 33%. But still, this is a striking development for an election that until very recently everyone had assumed was going to hinge on the economy.
Immigration had become a big issue among some of the candidates, mostly because of Donald Trump. And now with the terrorism aspect of it, that has played into that rhetoric out on the campaign trail and among the candidates.
Indeed. For months, people like Donald Trump, the Republican frontrunner, had been talking about sort of the foreign threat, but in the form of people who wanted to cross America's borders illegally. His focus on the campaign trail today is very much Syrian refugees. There is a political firestorm over this that I don't know anyone could have seen coming just a couple of weeks ago. Donald Trump, just in the last couple of days, has said that we need to keep them out and that for those that are here, that there should be a registry, a database for them. Hillary Clinton has said on the Democratic side, has said, well, no, this is anti-American, and this provides propaganda fodder for the Islamic State and other groups. Normally, it takes Congress months, years to act on anything. Mm-hmm. But within 10 days of the attacks in Paris, we had the House of Representatives voting to halt the flow of Syrian refugees entirely until some very stringent reviews can be done and new procedures put in place. Now, the administration points out there are millions of people who come to the United States each and every year from all corners of the earth, and many of them don't even need a visa. Many of them, if they're from a European country, a Western European country, can just waltz right in. Others come on tourist visas. There are easier ways to get into the United States than waiting 18 to 24 months to come in as a refugee.
Either of these issues probably would not get Congress to move very quickly, as we have seen, but it's almost like a combination of two volatile chemicals that, when mixed, all of a sudden, poof, something happens. Indeed, Congress has moved very quickly on this issue in response to the, the immediate threat of terrorism, and also with this whole angst of refugees and people coming into the country.
If you compare it to what Congress has been trying to do for about 15 years on another classification of non-U.S. citizens, on foreigners, just immigration reform in general, Congress has tried and failed over the last 15 years repeatedly to do anything at all on an issue that everyone agrees is quite pressing. Within 10 days of the Paris attacks, you had a vote in the House of Representatives, almost uniform Republican support for this bill, and about a third of the Democratic caucus voting for this. This is something that clearly has struck a chord with the American people.
While it may take Congress a long time to act on some things, each and every day, our VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman is hard at work, and we thank you so much for your perspectives.
Thank you, Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Billboard magazine has entered a long-standing debate by releasing its list of top 10 rappers of all time. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the list, which has some predictable names and is missing some that many people think should be there.
Let's start off with who's on the list, and then we'll talk about who's not.
Okay. Well, these are the top 10 greatest MCs of all time. And I think it's important to mention, because Billboard thought it was important to mention, that we're not talking about entertainers, we're not talking about lyricists, we're talking about MCs, the flow, as it were. Number 10, Lil Wayne, which is no surprise. A newcomer, well, kind of newcomer to mainstream America. Kendrick Lamar came in at number 9. Ghostface Killer, who is from the Wu-Tang Clan, came in at number 8. The only woman on the list, Lauryn Hill, came in at 7. Andre 3000, who happens to be one of my favorites, came in at number 6. 5, Nas. Number 4, Rakim. 3, my homeboy from Detroit, Eminem. And number 2, Jay-Z. No surprise here, the number 1 spot held by the notorious B.I.G.
A.K.A. Biggie Smalls.
Biggie Smalls, yes.
And one name that is missing, Tupac.
Now, that is, I think, the thing that has most people confused and I could say upset. In fact, Snoop has been very vocal about his displeasure, not because he's not on the list, because he is not on the list, but because he worked with Tupac for a few years while they were both in California. And he said he thinks Tupac deserves to be on the list. Billboard contends that Tupac was a phenomenal lyricist. He was a great writer, but he was not one of the greatest MCs, flowists, if you will, of all times. And so he did not make the list. Kanye West didn't make the list. Again, a great writer, wonderful entertainer. Who else? Drake didn't make the list.
Dr. Dre was kind of surprised.
Dr. Dre, not so surprised about Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre has never been known for being an MC. Dr. Dre is known for being a producer. But yes, Dre did not make the list. Drake did not make the list. KRS-One, who is the teacher, one of the founding members, if you will, of hip-hop, didn't make the list. Again, phenomenal lyricist, great writer, great mind. The flow,
And then there's people like Ice Cube, Ice-T. They're not on the list either.
I was kind of surprised that Ice Cube didn't make the list. But again, I think that when you look at the list and you think, well, if he's supposed to be on this list, who's not supposed to be on the list? That's a really hard decision to make. And you can't win with these lists. I mean, MTV did a top 50 greatest MCs of all time, and we're still arguing about that list 15 years later. The Source magazine does these lists every 10 years or so, and no one's ever satisfied about it. Hip hop has always been, will always be, incredibly subjective in a sense. It's what you like, and you know, what I love, other people might not. It's okay.
Well, you can let us know what you love or what you don't love by sending a tweet to Shauna. She is at VOA Lady DJ. You can also log on to our website, voanews.com.
At the top of our list is director Tracy Carter and our engineer Daryl Smith. And of course you for listening. Thanks for joining us. Come back and visit again. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You've been listening to International Edition. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States will not close its doors to refugees who are fleeing the violence in war-torn Syria. After reports that one of the ISIL terrorists involved in the Paris attacks on November 13th had entered Europe by posing as a refugee, new questions have arisen about the policy of admitting a portion of the Syrian refugee population into the United States. The United States had agreed to accept 10,000 Syrian refugees in fiscal year 2016, which began October 1st. At a press conference in Turkey following the G20 summit, President Obama said slamming the door in their faces would be a betrayal of our values.
The people who are fleeing Syria are the most harmed by terrorism. They are the most vulnerable as a consequence of civil war and strife. They are parents, they are children, they are orphans. And it is very important, and I was glad to see that this was affirmed again and again by the G20, that we do not close our hearts to these victims of such violence and somehow start equating the issue of refugees with the issue of terrorism.
President Obama noted that countries like Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan have already played an extraordinary role in accepting so many Syrian refugees, and that Europe's resources are now also under great strain dealing with the recent influx. The United States must step up and do its part, Mr. Obama said, and must do so while ensuring the safety of the American people by subjecting the refugees to rigorous screening and security checks. President Obama strongly rejected the idea that the United States should accept only Christians and not Muslim refugees from Syria. "We don't have religious tests for our compassion," he said. "That's not American. It's not who we are." The values that we're fighting against ISIL for are precisely that we don't discriminate against people because of their faith, said President Obama. "We are a nation of many peoples of different faiths, which means that we show compassion to everybody. Those are the universal values we stand for."
That was an editorial.